Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. So we went digging into the ground and started to burn.
Yeah, baby, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the fabulous Dora Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and the brilliant David Burns, the Solartopia song at the Tomorrow's Children album, Grammy-winning album from Appleseed Records. We've got a killer show, literally, today. We are going to talk about, for today and for next week and possibly the week after, the America's dying nukes. I have a piece up at the PRN website. It's also at nukefree.org. It's been a common dreams, Counterpunch and a few other websites, about Tuesday's upcoming debate and how we're hoping that Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and whoever else is on the stage we'll discuss the fact that nuclear power is dead, 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 and it's been proven to be ridiculously explosive at Fukushima after decades of the industry denying that a nuclear power plant, a commercial nuclear power plant, could blow up. First we had Chernobyl, and they said, well, that was just a Soviet reactor, and now we've had three General Electric reactors blow up at Fukushima. So enough of that. And meanwhile, the alternatives are being proven in Germany, among other places, the whole country of Germany, the world's fourth largest economy, the biggest one in Europe, is making a very successful, highly cost-saving transition to renewable energy, the energy weaned. It's called very, very successful. And so any arguments that the nuclear power industry may think they have to continue to operate are gone, gone, gone. Now, in this country, we have 99 remaining reactors operating. We have, licensed. Well, actually, it's only 98 that are licensed, since Indian Point 2 does not have a license anymore, and Indian Point 3 is about to lose its license. We'll talk about that next week with Tim Judson from Nuclear Information Resource Service. But this week, we want to talk about and we'll talk about those four reactors in the southeast. Two in South Carolina and two in Georgia that are under construction. We'll have Tom Clements on to talk about those. We can probably hint on those today. But I've got three tremendous experts on the nuclear power industry with us today. Paul Gunter, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Kevin Camps, are you with us?
Hello, Harvey. I'm here.
Hey, Kevin, how are you? Two wonderful frequent guests to our show, and the irreplaceable Michael Keegan from Michigan. Michael, are you with us?
Hello, Harvey.
All right. So listen, folks listening to the show, these are three of the serious heavyweights in the movement for safe energy in this country. And what we're going to do now, you know, there's no need anymore to discuss the broad issue of nuclear power. That's decided. No new nuclear plants on this earth make any sense. None did in the first place, but even Russia, China, India, the bigwigs that are talking about building new nuclear plants, they're going to have to do it in a totally fact-free environment, and we'll have to deal with that later. But what we have now is a debate on a form of energy that really has just narrowed down to the operating reactors, the reactors that continue to operate in this country, and that scare the hell out of me and have the rest of us living in absolute terror. Now, what prompted me to do this show in this form, and I want to do this at least this week and next week and the week after, is an email I got from you, Michael Keegan, you're the guilty party here, about an incident at Three Mile Island. Now, very, very few people are working on Three Mile Island Unit 1. We don't pay much attention to it. It's actually a very old reactor, very dangerous. I believe it opened in 74, so it's now 41 years old, if I do the math right. And what was this incident that happened at Three Mile Island Unit 1? What we're going to do here on this show, we're going to go from reactor to reactor. So, Michael Keegan, you're in southern Michigan, but you sit in your apartment and look at these documents all day, and you find things that nobody else sees. And we're going to talk about Davis-Bessey in Ohio, because Kevin is on with us, and he has tremendous expertise, as you do, Michael, on Davis-Bessey. Then we'll talk about Fermi 2. And, Paul, you'll jump in. You're a Michigan boy. And then we'll move to Plymouth, because Plymouth is the next likely reactor to shut. So, Michael, tell us, my hair stood on end when I saw this thing from TMI-1. We haven't thought about TMI-1 or TMI units at all for a while. What was this latest incident?
Well, the latest incident was reported in an event report, and these are just very brief abstracts that are required of the utility to report to the NRC, and then they post those in an obscure web page. But anyway, I picked up on it.
Only people like you who do this, you know, virtually full time, are going to see this. The Nuclear Regulatory, the NRC being the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, otherwise known as No Real Chance or Nobody Really Cares. So tell us about this incident report from TMI-1.
Well, the plant was on fire for 46 minutes. And they had to call for off-site assistance to the fire department to deal with this. And it was a second level emergency. It was alert. The plant was on fire for 46 minutes, which is very troubling. Many of these plants across the nation have inadequate fire protection, inadequate fire barriers, and they deny that that's the case, but when we look at the documentation, we find out that there's material there. Paul Gunter uncovered much of this over a decade ago. For 46 minutes, had a very harrowing event there at Three Mile Island.
What part of the reactor was on fire?
I don't believe it was a reactor on fire. I believe it was some circuitry that was on fire. I don't have that event report up in front of me. There's been a flurry of events going on this past week. But I do recall 46 minutes before they could get it out.
My God. Paul Conter, you did a lot of the pioneer work on the so-called fire protection systems at the nuclear power plants in the United States. Did this little 46-minute fire at Three Mile Island cross your path? And what would you think about an incident like this?
Well, the problem is not only are these plants, you know, they're full of combustible materials. Wire jacketing, for example, that's combustible. There's other materials, there's hydrogen gas in some of these plants that's used to operate the reactors. And so they're loaded with combustible materials, and a lot of these systems are also aging. So they periodically will, you'll have a high energy fire from an electrical arc that will cause a fire in this material. But that there's that side of it, that they are vulnerable to fire. The other side of it is that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, even though there are fire codes and fire standards, the agency is unwilling to enforce its own regulation. I mean, if you can imagine operating restaurants and daycares out of fire regulation, you'd wonder about that. But this is it's endemic across the industry that they're not in compliance with fire code that was promulgated by law. and, you know, actually promulgated by a fire that happened in 1975 that you and I, Harvey, are familiar with, at the Browns Ferry Nuclear Power Plant, where we almost had our Fukushima in 1975. That promulgated a whole set of new fire regulation to address these kinds of vulnerabilities. And, you know, just today we learned that the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant, which in Plymouth, Massachusetts, they have not been in compliance with these standards today since 1972. So, you know, more than a quarter of a century of non-compliance and non-enforcement by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So it's complicated by the fact that these plants are vulnerable, and as much as 50% of the risk of a core melt accident by NRC's own studies come from a fire. But, you know, there's no willingness or ability on the part of nuclear regulatory capture to enforce its own regulations.
Wow. Kevin Camps, you want to jump in on the fire issue here? Do you have another? I forgot about, of course, Browns Ferry we love to talk about because it was, you know, can't make this stuff up. The fire at Browns Ferry was started by a workman who was inspecting the innards of the reactor using a candle. And his study, the candle caught fire on the insulation at Browns Ferry and caused $100 million fire. Kevin, you got a fire story to throw in here?
Yeah, I guess the one that floors me is Fort Calhoun, Nebraska, in the year 2011, which was experiencing historic floods on the Missouri River, and the reactor was so underwater, they had flood barriers up just in the nick of time to prevent the water from pouring into safety-related buildings. But it turns out that there was a fire burning in the course of that shutdown that went on for days, and workers smelled the smoke, and nobody did anything about it. And in the end, it was the excuse for the NRC to put what we call Port Calhoun, because of the flooding, on the poor performer list of reactors in the country. They actually slapped them with a red finding, the worst safety violation, supposedly because of the fire, but that place was so damaged from the flood that they were going to be down anyway for a while. But it just was amazing that a fire was burning inside that plant. Luckily, the reactor was shut down at the time, but there's still the pool with high-level radioactive waste in it that has to be cooled 24/7, or else you're going to risk a mega catastrophe if that pool goes up in flames. And nobody did anything about the smoke. Everybody thought it was somebody else's problem. It's not my department. Just incredible incompetence when it comes to fire protection at nuclear power plants.
All right, so that's amazing. So we've hit Browns Ferry, Pilgrim, and Three Mile Island Unit 1. And Michael, you mentioned that there's hydrogen, and Paul, you mentioned as well that there's hydrogen around these plants. We have to remember that Unit 2 at Three Mile Island in 1978, March 28th, did develop a hydrogen bubble inside the containment. We don't know why it didn't explode to this day. We don't know why. We do know that people in the central Pennsylvania area fought to have a stronger containment at Unit 2 because it's in the flight path of the Harrisburg Airport. So God knows how many bullets we've dodged. So let's jump to another reactor near and dear to all of our hearts, the Fermi complex. Michael, you want to tell us a bit about the 1966 accident at Fermi 1, and then you can talk about Fermi 2 and Fermi 3.
Surely. Well, just let me, on the Three Mile Island, it was emergency declared, and it was an alert declaration due to fire in the auxiliary building. It happened at 9:15 this past Monday evening, and it was impacting a decay closed cooling pump and an A-train safety coolant. They report the fire is out, but they had to call for off-site fire assistance was requested. Can you imagine getting the call to come to Three Mile Island for a fire after Island in 1979? But let me go ahead.
Well, hold up, Michael. Any sane person, if I'm in a fire station and I get a call that there's a fire at the nuke and they want me to come there, I think I might consider heading the opposite direction, don't you think?
I might fill my britches. And I agree. Let me run over to Fermi 1, if you would.
Fermi 1 is in Monroe, Michigan, 40 miles south of Detroit, scenic Monroe, the only city in the world with a statue to George Armstrong Custer. Tell us about Fermi 1 in October 5th of 1966.
Well, on October 5th, 1966, there was a partial core melt of the reactor fuel at the Fermi 1. The coolant was a sodium, liquid sodium cooled reactor was shut off by a piece of metal that broke off loose and cut off 97% of cooling circulation. And it was ironic that just 49 years to the day, I'm reading an unusual event report, about an incident that happened at the Fermi 2 the day before, where they were in a configuration where there was potential for the vessel to drain down. And this existed for 81 minutes till they figured out what the problem was. They had configured their equipment improperly, and they had started the process towards a reactor vessel drainage. Now, fortunately, they were able to identify after 81 minutes what was the problem and cease that process. But they had started in that direction. And just a couple days prior to that, they had found a major piece of equipment that had 12 out of the 16 bolts were loose, were just hand tightened, were never torqued, were never tightened down. And that speaks to poor quality assurance. But let
God,
me back
amazing.
Way up as to the origin of this whole nightmare of a quagmire and the objective of the Fermi 1 project. Now, Fermi 1 had the core meltdown, a partial core melt in 66. But the objective of the Fermi 1 project was to produce weapons-grade plutonium, suitable for weapons. Now, the public was told power too cheap to meter, abundant power going to produce more power than it consumes. But the real hidden agenda was to get the plutonium for weapons purposes. Now, they were unable to do that because Fermi 1 was a terrible, basically, failure. But that's the genesis of nuclear power. It's intertwined with nuclear weaponry. And it's the pursuit of nuclear weapons is the ultimate fascist axe, the ultimate coercive tool to hold over people's heads. And so the ruse that we have to have nuclear power, it's just a cover so we can continue in nuclear weaponry. And it's a terrible price to pay. And we're producing energy in the most pathological way possible. Our government has just got to stop it. And so we battle these battles and we review documents and we bring things to light. And we try to appeal to the regulator, appeal to the king. But it's a very totalitarian kind of situation where we've always got to appeal to the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and then they have the ultimate say. It's futile.
Right. Michael, you're 40 miles. I'm sorry. Ann Arbor is 40 miles away. I was in Ann Arbor in 1966 on October 5th when this thing almost blew up at Fermi Unit 1. I didn't know a word about it, and this last time I was again in Ann Arbor October 5th, 49 years later, and you're telling me we had this incident again. Paul Gunter, you're a Detroit boy. Tell us what you want to say about Fermi 1 and Fermi 2.
Well, I think that what we have is an example of the vulnerability and the inherent danger in these two units. We have a meltdown at Fermi 1 that you've already talked about, but what people need to know is that Fermi 2 is an identical in design to the Fukushima Daiichi units. It is a General Electric Mark 1 boiling water reactor. It's one of the biggest Mark One type reactors in the world, and it has, as Fukushima demonstrated, it has a containment system that has a 100% failure rate now established by these three meltdowns at Fukushima Daiichi. So when you need a containment system that works under severe accident conditions, you can rest assured that it will fail. It will fail us under that, under those conditions at, you know, just 35 miles from Detroit. And there are 23 of these reactors around the country. Well, actually now with Vermont Yankee's closure, there's only 22 that are operating. There are actually 24 of these units that were constructed and operated and now have upwards of 600, 700 metric tons of nuclear waste, high-level radioactive waste, that's stored in these storage ponds that sit in the attic of the reactor building. That's 6 to 10 stories up in the reactor building. So you've got the a containment that won't work, loaded not only with the nuclear fuel that could melt down under severe accident conditions, but on top of that sits a pool with thousands of radioactive waste bundles, used fuel, that have to be constantly cooled. If they lose that cooling ability, either slowly as in a boil-off or rapidly as in a drain-down, it could constitute a nuclear waste fire, hundreds of tons of nuclear waste catching fire, outside of what's rated as a containment, a poor containment at that. But these things are literally the jalopies of the nuclear industry. These are 1960 designs that were tagged in 1970s as inoperable, then demonstrated to be prone to failure at the Fukushima disaster. So, you know, that's roughly a third of the U.S. nuclear industry with this track record of proven failure and vulnerability, not only by design, but by intent that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission continues to license these things, re-license these things, as is the case with Fermi 2 now, for 20 more years of risk. And, you know, this is the kind of gambit and gamble that we run with nuclear power in an aging industry.
Well, it's amazing. It's truly amazing. And so we had, is that Kevin?
Is that Kevin?
Okay, so let me say something real quick, and then Kevin, I want you to jump in. We've got three Michigan guys on the phone here at the meet. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, let me say a couple words here, and then we'll get to you.
Yeah, I would just add that another irony about the whole nuclear power plant is that you've got Unit 2 having an accident, near miss on the 49th anniversary of the Fermi 1 meltdown. And then you've got the Fermi 3 proposal that would be built right on the very spot where Fermi 1 had its meltdown in 1966. And we've got that on appeal in the D.C. Supreme Court of Appeals, the second highest court in the land. And that is the quality assurance issue that Michael Keegan spoke about. That is the transmission corridor issue that would be common to Fermi 2 and Fermi 3. And it's also the nuclear waste confidence issue. So we've got three appeals in the second highest court in the land, and we have been fighting Fermi 3, which they haven't even broken ground on yet, since September of 2008 when they applied for an operating license, which has been rubber stamped by the NRC, but we're still fighting it all these years later, and we hope to nip it in the bud before they even break ground.
Pretty mind-boggling. Well, Kevin's from the Beyond Nuclear Organization.
Oh, Gunter is with us from Beyond Nuclear. And Michael Houston is with Don't Waste Michigan. Okay, I am getting a slight echo here. Maybe it's my phone. But I need to talk a little further about the reactors in Michigan. Tell us, Michael Keegan, about Fermi Unit 3.
Well, Fermi 3 is an economically simplified boiling water reactor. And what makes it economically simplified is they're going to have the taxpayers and the ratepayers pay for it while it's being built. And no time will the utility or venture capital put their money in. It's a boondoggle. And the cost is already estimated at over $15 billion. It was supposed to take 3 years to license it. It took nearly 6 years to license it. And we've got them in the court system. They'll be tied up for another 3 years at least. But it's not needed. It's never been built. And there are all kinds of problems with that. There are foundation problems.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way.
We challenge that. Okay. We're going to block that. We're hopeful that we'll be successful in blocking the nuclear waste production, enforcing an environmental impact statement, and forcing scrutinization of the waste quality.
And the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.
All right, are we back? Kevin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Michael?
Yes.
And Paul?
Yes, I'm here. I got cut off. Sorry.
That's okay. No, we all did. We had a slight technical problem with an echo. And you're all doing great. We have four Michigan guys here. Michael Keegan in Monroe, Michigan, with Don't Waste Michigan, right in the belly of the beast there in Monroe, talking to us about Fermi Units 1, 2, and 3. Paul Gunter, a Detroit boy with Beyond Nuclear, and Kevin Camps from Kalamazoo about Beyond Nuclear. And I graduated from the University of Michigan in 1967. I just went back there for a reunion of the Michigan Daily. So I want to talk now very quickly. We're focusing here on operating reactors. We've talked about the fire that they just had at Three Mile Island Unit 1, and Paul filled us in about the history that he helped pioneer of controversy over fire retardants and non-retardants in nuclear reactors. We have just had another incident at Fermi, Unit 2. Unit 1 in 1967 almost blew up. It was a sodium-cooled fast breeder reactor, and it would have put a very big hole in southeastern Michigan and wiped out the Great Lakes for a couple hundred million years. And then we also want to talk now about Unit 2, Fermi Unit 2, which is operating. It's a Fukushima clone. And on top of all that, they want to open Fukushima. I guess we can call it Fukushima in Michigan, Fermi Unit 3. Let's talk real quickly about this insane idea of building a new reactor at the Fermi site. Kevin, you were talking a bit about that. Tell us what exactly is Detroit, is it Detroit Edison? What exactly are they trying to do here with Fermi Unit 3?
Yeah, Detroit Edison and General Electric Hitachi is the reactor vendor. And as Michael was saying, it's called an economically simplified boiling water reactor. So it's sort of supposed to be a new and improved version of the Fukushima jalopies that Paul talked about, the Mark 1s. And they applied for this license way back in September 2008, and we have been fully engaged in resisting this proposed new reactor ever since then. And it's gone all the way to the second highest court in the land at this point. We have these three appeals on nuclear waste confidence. They really should not generate any more high-level radioactive waste, because they don't know what to do with it. We have a quality assurance appeal, and we had Arne Gunderson of Fairwinds Associates as our expert witness. They lacked quality assurance at all for a number of years at the beginning of this process, which means their seismic borings, that's earthquake risks at the site, are very questionable, very dubious. They need to be done over at the very least. They don't plan to do that. And then the third area of appeal is transmission corridor, and specifically in the Fermi 3 case, it's the environmental impacts under National Environmental Policy Act. They're going to have to blast many miles, something like 10 miles of brand new transmission line through places like forested wetlands, which are habitat for endangered species, many endangered species, only one of which is the indigenous constrictor called the eastern fox snake, which has taken a central place in the whole Fermi 3 fight. And so we've got them on these three issues. We are very confident that our appeals have tremendous merit, and so we're going to pursue those as far as we have to try to stop this thing.
Paul Gunter, why would any a utility company want to even think about building a new atomic reactor? I mean, it's completely, well, I'll let you say it. Well, what's the deal?
Well, it's about building empire. Nuclear power is the most expensive way conceivable for generating electricity. If you want to figure out the most expensive way requiring the most capitalization to build an empire, that's nuclear power. It's the opposite of people's power. It's total concentrated, centralized corporate power and tied to the military-industrial complex, as Michael's pointed out. So, it's really about it's about the concentration of power, not just electricity, but the idea of concentrated corporate power. And that's really what this is all about, indenturing of your electric ratepayers to a forever cost.
Unbelievable. Michael Keegan, you're in the belly of the beast there. Tell us why you think Detroit Edison is even thinking about building a new nuke.
It's all about the money. It would be very lucrative for them, a big cash cow, getting federal tax money, that's taxpayer money, and getting money from the ratepayers as it's being built. It would be very lucrative financially for them. Per dollar would not kick back much energy. You could do it much more cost effective with renewables, conservation, wind, solar, and so forth. But as Paul points out, this is a concentration of power and wealth, and it's about empire. And it's a cartel. These utilities do not want to give up any market share to anybody. So they're trying to rig the game so that ratepayers are locked in to being stuck with these huge baseload facilities, which are really not in the interest of the people. The grid is antiquated. It's over nearly 120 years old, and it's just not serving the people. And the concept of having to have baseload power to keep the grid up is really a pathological way to look at end energy use. And we could do much better, but the capital is concentrated, and the politicians, they love the PAC money, and so they march forward with the political economy and the strength, and they buy up the community. They're the biggest fish in this community. They got everybody falling in line.
All right, very good. are not good. So, and the bottom line here is that Detroit Edison wants a legislative act that will allow them to collect the money from the ratepayers before the nuke is finished. And so as they're building this ridiculous nuclear plant, they will be charging the ratepayers. It doesn't cost them any money. The more the nuke costs, the more money they make. It has absolutely nothing to do with generating electricity. It's a total scam. Okay, so let's move down the coast now. We want to talk about the most rickety and I think probably the most dangerous reactor in the country, if not the world, which is the Toledo, near Toledo, the Davis-Vesey reactor. And Kevin Camps, you've done a lot of the basic work on this nuclear reactor near Toledo. It's a, as Paul Gunther has said, Detroit Fermi number 2 is a clone, a Fukushima clone, and Davis-Vesey is a Three Mile Island clone. So tell us, Kevin, and then we'll go to Michael and Paul. What is happening at the Davis-Vesey reactor?
Sure, yeah. Boy, we just got some very interesting information recently in the last 10 days or so. There was a meeting of the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards, and I was in the room, and Keegan was on the phone, and others were on the phone watchdogging this process. And wouldn't you know, but what we've been saying for 4 years, that the concrete containment shield building at Davis-Vesey was on the verge of collapse, and the company denied it the whole 4 years, they just admitted themselves that, yeah, it's on the verge of collapse. So what it is cracking of this concrete shield building, which is a part of the containment structure supposed to keep the radioactivity in if there's a reactor core meltdown so it doesn't get out into the environment and cause a catastrophe. Well, it's been severely cracked by their own admission since 1978. They're trying to blame the cracking on the blizzard of 1978. We call that a snow job from the start because there's not just one root cause. There's many root causes of the cracking. They also denied for the past 4 years that the cracks are growing. And the reason they did that, of course, is to say, oh, it's going to be okay. But even more specifically, because we had intervened against the 20-year license extension before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they want to keep operating after Earth Day 2017 and go out to 2037. And we've been fighting them the whole time for 5 years now. And by saying, no, the cracks happened in January of 1978 over the course of a few days, and they haven't gotten worse, they blocked our intervention because it has to be aging-related under NRC's Byzantine rules. Except in late 2013 now, they admitted the cracks are growing, and they didn't know why. And we had some ideas, but they've been covering up that they had locked the water in the walls when they whitewashed the building 40 years late. In 2012, to prevent the blizzard of 78, except they missed it by a few decades. They locked that water in the walls, and every time it freezes at Davis-Vesey, the cracks grow by about a half inch in circumference around the building. And we just learned at this meeting and the documents that Keegan just dug out, the transcript of the testimony from 10 days ago, that a portion of the shield building up towards the top, it, just under the dome, is 70% cracked. 70% of the circumference of that building is cracked at the exterior face. And what they admitted at this Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards was they kept using the figure a slab of concrete 100 feet across in circumferential horizontal orientation, 3 inches deep because that's where the rebar layer is on the exterior. And they wouldn't give that up and down dimension. But they were admitting that it could well crumble off. And there are safety-significant structures below, like the borated water storage tank for nuclear criticality control in the reactor core, as well as in the pool. The auxiliary building, which houses any number of safety-significant structures and systems, is below this severely cracked and worsening shield building. And they're talking about chunks of concrete falling off the exterior and plummeting down hundreds of feet onto these safety systems. And First Energy saying it's all fine because we've got this aging management program, we're going to keep an eye on things, and it, we'll never let it get to that point. And, you know, I think that up and down dimension especially when they admit that 70% of the circumference is cracked in a band some tens of feet tall, you have to assume that that entire band is going to come crumbling down. We're talking tens of feet tall, 100 feet across, 3 inches deep, and that's probably, you know, lowballing it, because this is the company admitting this, right? We're talking hundreds of tons of falling concrete that could simply destroy the safety-related structures below. And, you know, there have been so many bizarre moments in the past several years of this proceeding. One of them was when one of the three licensing board judges, Judge Kastenberg, said to us, "Well, you seem to be assuming that this collapse would take place when the reactor is operating." And we just looked at each other like, well, yeah, of course we would. That's the worst-case scenario, and the reactor's operating most of the time. They shut down every year and a half to refuel for a month, but the rest of the time they're operating, unless they're broken down. So that's how they're playing the game is, you know, we're hoping to get away with this. We're hoping nobody finds out about it. We're hoping the media doesn't report it. But in the meantime, we will approve no matter what the company asks for. And that's where we're at.
Oh, my God. Michael Keegan, you dug up some of this stuff. What do you got to say about your neighbor, Dave, especially there?
Yeah, I was first to get my calculator out and actually calculate the weights, the mass of the 3 inches deep, 100 feet across, and 280 feet tall. That would be 525 tons of concrete coming sloughing off. The entire building itself, shield the containment building, we estimate at between 20,000 to 25,000 tons of concrete and rebar. And what was very disturbing was back in 2011, there were two engineers for the NRC who said there's potential that 90% of that shield building will come down if there's a minor earthquake. And that was suppressed. And it had to be suppressed because they wanted to restart the reactor. And it's all about the money. And what we have at David Spezzi is really a showstopper. This shield building is around the secondary containment, and inside that is the reactor. If 20 to 25,000 tons come down, it's going to tip over that secondary into the reactor, and we're going to be on our way to a major nuclear disaster. It's a showstopper. The shield building, the proper fix is to replace the shield building completely. But what we see down at Crystal River down in Florida was when their shield building had cracks and had to be replaced, that it was cost exorbitant. Over $2 billion would be the price tag. And FirstEnergy just doesn't want to touch it. So their plan seems to be to get the ratepayers on the hook for a bailout. They're asking before the PUCO, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, asking for $3 billion in bailout, trying to lock in new ratepayers from other communities to be on the hook for the David Spezzi. Well, it's a pick and a poke because
it's a mind-boggling.
It's not structurally sound. Does not
Paul Gunter. Paul Gunter, you want to jump in? Paul, you got anything on David Spezzi?
Well, this is a reactor that had, the FirstEnergy had basically hidden corrosion of the reactor vessel for years. And again, this was a situation where the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and FirstEnergy were in cahoots to run a reactor with a hole in its head, the reactor pressure vessel head, caused by corrosion. That had eaten through 6 3/4 inches of carbon steel and was within 3/16 of an inch of rupturing into a nuclear catastrophe. And this is the kind of gamble that the industry and the regulator they play routinely every day as they run these reactors on these ridiculous margins in order to promote a production agenda and the financial well-being of this power-hungry, centralized power system.
It's mind-boggling. I do want to point out, by the way, Michael, you mentioned, Michael or Kevin, you mentioned the possibility that the shield building could be brought down
by a minor earthquake. Now, people don't think of earthquakes in Ohio, but in fact, in January 31st, 1986, an earthquake hit northern Ohio and actually damaged the Perry nuclear plant, which is, I guess, about 100 miles east along Lake Erie. It's on the other side of Cleveland, on the east side of Cleveland. David Spezia is to the west. And that is the first instance of a U.S. reactor actually being damaged by an earthquake. And so the idea of an earthquake, we've since, of course, had the earthquake that damaged North Anna in Virginia, but the idea of an earthquake damaging a reactor in Ohio is certainly not far-fetched. There's a very large, actually probably the biggest earthquake system inside the continental North America is the New Madrid Fault, which runs up the Mississippi River and has branches off to the northeast along the coast of Lake Erie. And now, being a Columbus, Ohio resident, we know here in the state of Ohio that Dave Espessi is the focal point of a $3 billion bailout proposed, as Michael mentioned. They threw in a coal burner onto that, the Sammis plant, which is 50 years old. And we were talking about this, Michael, in Michigan last weekend, that we're afraid that possibly FirstEnergy has stuck the Sammis plant onto this a rate request just so they can throw it away as kind of a sop to the environmental movement and let people think we won a victory by killing Sammis when they go ahead and continue to fund Dave Espessi. What do we think about that, guys?
Well, I'd like to add that if you're a stockholder of FirstEnergy, not to worry because you're a limited liability corporation. So if they do crap their britches, they're going to walk away, and it's limited liability. And also, you've got the Price Anderson. So it's irresponsible rogue industry, which gets the blessings from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that aids and abets the process.
Okay. Well, now let's. I want to jump over. There's a lot of speculation that the Pilgrim nuclear plant will be the next to shut. The NRC has actually come out with a report of some kind saying that they don't meet safety specs. And Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear, I think you're on top of that one. So can you talk to us about Pilgrim, which is about 35 miles south of Boston and about a mile from Plymouth Rock, where the Pilgrims first landed?
Yeah, well, we like to refer to this as Pilgrim's progress towards shutdown. Again, Pilgrim is one of these 22 remaining General Electric Mark I boiling water reactors like Fukushima Daiichi. You know, they have had such a poor performance record in terms of, not even supporting their own production agenda. So there have been all these unscheduled shutdowns, which has put them, they will ignore a lot of safety issues, but the NRC is loath to ignore when you can't follow a production schedule. And that'll put you in jeopardy a lot quicker than if you violate safety issues. But the Pilgrim plant is actually doing both. It has a poor performance record with unscheduled shutdown. They have had poor performance and safety coming through a major blizzard that hit the Massachusetts seacoast in January of this year. They had record snowfalls. And it's these kinds of natural catastrophes that can cause these prolonged blackouts. And this was one of the concerns with Pilgrim, where they had lost offsite power and were having a problem performance through that offsite power period. And but it's it's also the fact that that Entergy is the corporation that runs this, and they have a really bad record right now of putting money back into maintenance for their atomic power plant. And again, they're sort of, you know, treating them and running them into the ground is what we're concerned about, and raising the risks of accidents. But what we've heard through the grapevine, and I'm willing to share it with the public, is that this Saturday on October 10th, we're expecting an announcement from Entergy regarding the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant and its future. So when an electric utility does a press statement on a Saturday, you got to think that it's not going to be good news. And so we're expecting a major announcement in just a few days with regard to the fate of this nuclear power plant.
Wow. So actually, I know they do it on Saturday because they know all the Jews are in synagogue and won't hear it. Kevin Camps, have you been following Pilgrim? What can you? Well, are we thinking now, Paul and you guys, that they're going to announce that Pilgrim's going to shut? Is that the likely scenario?
Well, I mean, there's other news that's kind of contributing to Entergy's financial crisis and management crisis. Dave Lockbaum at Union of Concerned Scientists has pointed out that all of Entergy's reactors but one are in degraded performance columns at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and Pilgrim's one of those with a really bad safety rating, and so are the two Entergy reactors in Arkansas, where a worker was killed when Entergy dropped a 600-ton load on his head a couple of years ago, and eight other workers were injured. So they're having real...
Wasn't he wearing a helmet?
I'm sorry? Well, he
was wearing a helmet?
24 years old. 24 years old.
God.
At 7 in the morning on an Easter Sunday, and there was a NRC annual performance meeting at Palisades in Michigan, which is another Entergy reactor. And Entergy's, you know, site vice president, top dog at Palisades, tried to say Entergy has a immaculate industrial safety record. 3 days after this young man was crushed to death in Arkansas, so when the public comments time came up, I focused my entire 5 minutes on the fatal accident. That's what they do. They try to gloss over, you know, oh, we're Palisades. We're not Arkansas Nuclear One. Same company, same senior management. And we just learned from Dave Lockbaum that two of Entergy's top managers, the chief nuclear officer and the chief operating officer, are suddenly out of the blue resigning, I think on November 1st. There's a major shakeup, and we've known for years that top executives of Entergy are selling off their stock in the company. That's an interesting thing to do. And then there's, there's just so much going on. So another Entergy Mark One, it's called Fitzpatrick in New York. It was really interesting. Last weekend, the elected officials at local, state, and federal level, including congressmen, held a rally at Fitzpatrick to try to keep it open, to keep it operating. As Paul was saying, you know, the campaign contributions, as Mike was saying, it owns the local community. People are, you know, they're asking how high we should jump when Entergy says jump. And it just dawned on me that we're usually the ones protesting in the streets, holding a rally for them to shut down.
I like that.
Now maybe, the paradigm has shifted, and they're having rallies to try to keep them open.
Maybe we'll have the Quakers go up there and train these guys in nonviolence. That would be good. But I'm going to bet Paul Gunter and Michael Keegan and Kevin Camps. We're here with Michael Keegan from Don't Waste Michigan and Kevin Camps and Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear. I'm going to be doing this now for weeks. I'm going to be talking to everybody who has specific knowledge about these specific nuclear reactors. That's the way the movement is now. I think the broad battle over atomic power has been won. We've seen the worst, so far, at Fukushima. We've seen the best in Germany, where the transition is being successfully made. They've set 9 reactors in Germany. They'll set the remaining 10 by 2022. And they'll be going to totally renewable energy, as are Iceland and other countries around the world, including Hawaii, I think, which will be going there pretty quick. But we also now are having, as Paul has just announced, on October 10th, this Saturday, Entergy will be making an announcement at Pilgrim, the nuclear plant near Boston, where I have been many times. I'm actually born in Boston. and I'm going to bet that we will be hearing about a shutdown. What do you guys think?
Most definitely. I am reviewing a Monday document about unanalyzed condition of significant degrade of fire vulnerabilities at the Pilgrim. And I also saw documents where they have a fire barrier that is totally inadequate going back to 1972. So that plant is very, very vulnerable. There's no way for them to recover. This plant is done. We're looking at a paradigm collapse.
Paul, what do you think? Do you think they're going to announce a shutdown?
Reactors are closing. We've got, by our count, we've got 13 reactors in the United States that are leaning more and more towards closure. We've actually got a page on our website now called Reactors Are Closing. You can go there daily now and check out which local reactor is going to shut down next. But it's, you know, the dominoes are leaning now. As you point out, no utility in their right mind is going to build a new reactor. More and more utilities are now looking at nuclear power as a super hot potato that they have to drop because it's no longer competitive. They're aging to the point of breakdown, and breakdown means catastrophe with this technology.
Kevin Camps, what's your 2 cents worth here? You think they're going to announce a shutdown?
Yeah, you know, I think so. Dr. Mark Cooper at Vermont Law School predicted a list of a dozen reactors, and that was 2 years ago, that were at risk of near-term shutdown, is how he put it. And one of the categories on his criteria for determining that was public resistance. And at Pilgrim, you've got some of the strongest anti-nuclear activism in the country with Pilgrim Watch, with Citizens Awareness Network, with Tape Down Winders. You've got some really great groups in Boston, and if anybody can shut a reactor down, it's those guys.
Yep, that's right. I was just there, actually. I just spoke in Watertown and then on Cape Cod. We had great turnouts. People are really fierce, as well they should be. So listen, next week I'm going to have you guys back. We'll add in Tim Judson and Linda Seeley. We're going to go around the country, talk about Diablo Canyon, Indian Point, Fitzpatrick, and Jenna in New York. And later on, we'll bring in Tom Clements to talk about the four reactors more or less under construction in the Southeast. So this has been a Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are hopefully in our next show going to be celebrating the shutdown, permanent shutdown, of the Pilgrim Atomic Reactor. Hopefully, God willing, the next to go down will be Davis Bessie. Boy, if there's any reactor in the world that makes me nervous, it's Davis Bessie and others to come. Hey, Paul Gunther, Kevin Camps, Michael Keegan, thank you so much. Beyond Nuclear, don't wait. Again, we'll see you next week in the Solartopia Duke-free world.
The Garden of Eden.